Deplorable Nation, a podcast where your voices can be heard, where things that affect you and your family are important, because it's important to all of us. Every one of us matters and everybody has a voice. We're going to be bringing you news, current events, and throw in a lot of humor. And then you decide for yourself. Hello, and welcome to episode number 15 of Deplorable Nation. I'm your host, Deplorable Janet. Today's episode is called Across the Pond. I'm joined today by a very good friend of mine. His name is Matt. You probably also know him on Twitter as Kung Fu Medic. So everybody give a warm welcome to Mr. Matt. How are you doing today, my dear?
I'm very good, Janet. Thanks for having me on the show. A little bit excited. Tiny little bit starstruck, but I don't want to. No, I'm good. Thanks for having me. This is an awesome opportunity. So thank you.
I'm excited to have you because you and I have had a lot of back and forth on Twitter and pretty much on the same page. And I know that you watch the politics and things that are going on over here, as well as all of the crazy that's going on in your neck of the woods. So tell everybody where you're from.
So I'm from the UK, a little tiny county just in the south or the middle, I suppose would be the best way to explain it. I'm trying to think how long it's been since I've been speaking to you, Janet. I think I started talking to you. I first heard of you guys on the No Mercy pod. And then I obviously started realized that you had the medical background and knowledge and everything as well, which was brilliant. And I was quite late to the party, which was not my intention, which I'll go into later on. But so England, basically, was the short answer for that question. So, yeah.
So tell everybody, tell everybody a little bit about you. Like, what is your history?
Okay, so I'm only a young chap. I'm 40, but I joined the British Army when I was 16. And I served in the British Army for just shy of 6 years. I did a tour in Kosovo in 99 and a couple of other bits and pieces. I came out of the Army when I was 22. And then I did all the other exciting jobs that you do when you leave the forces, driving, sales, and all that kind of bits until, you know, trying to find myself. And then I joined the circus because I couldn't find myself. And I was in the circus for about 10 years.
What did you do in the circus?
So I did stilt walking, fire breathing, body burning, fire staff, fire nunchucks, tumbling, stilt walking. I think I said that already. Foot characters. And that was about it really. So it wasn't like a big top circus, like you get, you know, where they come in and put a big installation and thing, but it was more like an agency, if you will. So I worked in the mm-hmm. office. People would phone up and say, right, I need a contortionist. I need a sword swallower. We'd source them and then sort out the transaction and then send them to the gig. We had our own workshops where we'd build props and stage installations. We'd do weddings, social events, festivals, private venues and private functions and other bits and pieces. So it was like a circus, like a mobile circus type thing. So we were called Interactive Performers was our title. But that was fun. So that was great. I did that for about 10 years. And then I had an epiphany when I was about 30 and thought, I can't keep doing this forever. And that's when I decided to get into medicine. So I got into medicine in 2010, where I was a paramedic. It's slightly different over in the UK compared to some of the states in the US that I gather. We don't have the dual trained like you guys do because you have the fire and the paramedic. Sometimes they're both trained together. We don't have that yet. So I was just responding to 999 calls, which is the same for you guys with your 999. No, 911, sorry.
Right.
We'd go out to all the, you know, murder death kills. and all the lovely stuff and other bits and pieces. So I did that for about 5 or 6 years, realised that I have a problem with management when they're not doing things right. So my
Amen
journey,
to that.
I've said this to you before when we've spoke, but, you know, I never realised it at the time, but I consistently say the right things to the wrong people. And, you know, therefore, I've always, you know, suffered because of it, but I've never really been bothered by that. So it's always been a bit difficult. So I did that for a while, and then I went back to university to do another degree, which now allows me to work with GPs or doctors, as you guys call them. We call them GPs for general practitioner. You just call them doctors, don't you, I think, over there? I'm not sure. Physicians.
We have doctors, but there's all kinds. I mean, we do have general practitioners as well, you know, all the specialty medicine. Yeah. But general practitioners are basically like family care.
Stuff. Yeah. Okay, fine. Lovely. So I work with them doing their home visits, do their telephone triage, work in the surgery with them, seeing patients. And we call that see and treat. And that's basically it. So that's what I've been doing for the last few years. and then, so I was bumbling along doing that, which was brilliant. And then all this palaver happened with COVID, obviously. And that kind of, I think when you work in the field, as you can appreciate, you people tell you stuff. Consultants chatting to me, coroners, A&E consultants, right. Nurses, all different fields just give me these snippets of information. And when I was working, doing the see and treat and other bits and pieces then, it was not really sure exactly what was going on. So it started raising some questions as to, what was going on. Because I had friends who work in coroners and morgues and things that were telling me that they'd not been signing death certificates of natural causes since about mid to late March, which got me thinking, hang on a minute. So, you know, I started thinking, this isn't right. And then I had all this information that I was being given and talked about and sent. So I thought about, let's see what to do. See if we can try and, you know, educate people or, you know, raise awareness of what's going on. I don't know. I mean, you can appreciate in this journey, Janet, that it's difficult to find yourself in the whole scheme of things when you're kind of red pilled or awoke or whatever. I don't like to say those words because they assume that everyone else is a sheep, and I don't like to say that because it's not
right.
I just don't think it's cool. because I was one of them when I was in the military. I was very much pro the Queen, pro the monarchy, pro the government, and all this kind of stuff. I've been the other side of the fence where you just kind of follow orders, but then I was young. And that's kind of why they get you to do it, because you're young and you do it for your friends that you're in the army with, not necessarily, you know, the bigger picture. You don't always get told the bigger picture, you know.
Right, so, that's very true.
So you just kind of bumble along thinking you're doing the right thing. And it was just, I think when I was, so for me, to backtrack slightly, when I first come into contact with COVID, I didn't realise it at the time. I think it was, when were we talking? So we're talking September, October last year. Mm-hmm. I was working in out of hours, we call it. So basically when patients come to see you on the weekend at the hospital or whatever, and the surgeries are closed. And I was having quite an influx of patients coming in with lingering coughs, tickly coughs, relenting fevers and things that wouldn't disappear with paracetamol, you know, and just generally feeling a little bit breathless, but really like non-specific symptoms. They were okay in themselves, but you couldn't really pinpoint it down to anything. And I was getting loads of patients like that. So I think that was the first wave, if you will.
Right.
And then we flew over to Asia, Southeast Asia on holiday, around January time. And that was the Chinese New Year. So there was quite a few Chinese people where we were in Thailand. There was people wearing masks, but no more than you usually get in Asian countries and so forth. There was no quarantine. There was no lockdown. They weren't even encouraging you to sanitize your hands. You know, there was no panic, I think the best word
right.
would be to describe it.
Which is very key that's the thing. It's described as panic.
100%. But then I think in those sorts of countries, the media doesn't have such a big sort of role over there. I think it does, right. But they're not like what we are, I suppose, in that regards. They're always out and about. They don't, you know, sit in and
do what we do. So I think they just weren't really concerned by it as much as we were. So anyway, so I came back. We came back off holiday in about February. And then I was doing my seeing treat again. And obviously, I was still getting the same sort of symptoms. And obviously, we were aware of COVID and stuff then. We had no PPE, no masks, nothing at all, you know, because no one really announced anything. And I remember thinking to myself, any time now, Boris, who's our Prime Minister, Boris Johnson.
Right.
Yeah. he'll close the borders and we'll be all right. And then it started coming across from Asia, across Europe, and we were seeing what was happening in Spain and Italy and all this. And there was no shutting of the borders. People were still flying about. And then it came into England and we started getting casualties. And then he only shut the borders when we were getting about, I think it was about 800 deaths a day. So it was almost like, for me, that point, I was like, well, you could have stopped this from happening at any time within reason. Now, you can appreciate, obviously, medicine as well. So we look at Australia and New Zealand. They did the right thing. You could argue against, you could say that they did or and didn't do the right thing, if that makes sense. They're almost delaying the inevitable, aren't they? They shut everything down, stopped the flights, and they had very few cases, very few deaths in New Zealand, should I say. But the problem they've got now is any time they open up the borders, people are going to come back to New Zealand, you're going to have your asymptomatic patients, and they're going to get it again. So they're always going to be battling it, aren't they? So that's where the whole herd immunity situation wasn't wrong. I think it's just people don't understand medicine, do they? So when we're...
True, that's very true.
Exactly. So when it's like when we go to war, you know, you expect there to be casualties, but it's you know, occupational hazard, they call it, don't they? So with medicine, when someone says, oh, this many people have died, you think, well, that's not loads. Not that you're being callous or insensitive, but you think, well, in the grand scheme of things, that's not a pandemic. So I think New Zealand did it right in a way, but we'll see later on, won't we, when the world, if it ever goes back to us being allowed to fly around and stuff, they're going to be constantly battling the infections. So I thought maybe
And I was going to say, plus other infections, because everybody is so immune weakened now from wearing masks all the time. Healthy people should never wear a mask. You should never, ever make healthy people wear a mask. And so you're decreasing your immune system, which means that if they ever do lift mask restrictions and, you know, mask orders, mandates, whatnot, you're going to see a whole new influx of sick people, not necessarily from COVID, but from lung infections and other things because they're so weakened.
100%. 100%. I mean, there's been big debates about the mask, pro-mask or anti-mask, they call it. And it's this kind of situation that got me on my journey, because I had a friend, I still have a friend, but he was doing a talk in our local town. I have friends. Not many, but I have friends. But he was doing a talk in town, in our local town, where he was just trying to raise awareness of what was going on with the mask mandates and everything else. And he's been in this kind of journey for a long, long, long time. He's wrote a couple of books and he's very intense. He's very intense. And he's all about for the frequencies and keeping check of your ego and all this kind of stuff, which when I was just dipping my toe in the situation was really like, oh, fuck, man, this is... I'm allowed to swear on here, aren't I? I just need to clarify.
You are. Absolutely, you
can. Okay, sorry, brilliant. So he was just a bit fucking intense, man. So it was a bit like, whoa, I'm new to this and you're talking to me about all of this stuff, you know, and it's a bit fucking, I was just a bit, right, I think I need to backtrack a little bit and see what's going on. That's when I found the No Mercy pod. And I was like, right, well, this, I learned so much from that. And then going away and researching it and listening to Barb and Tommy and yourself, obviously. So I was like, right, okay. So you don't have to be, you know, chicken oriental mental to be looking into this. And it was nice to know that there was some actual normal folk out there.
Right.
that they're going down the same route. So that's when I started pushing the Twitter handle and trying to get on Twitter a bit more, because I had 150 followers. I think I've got nothing on it at the minute still now. But I thought it was a good platform for me to start, because Facebook is a bit rubbish and Insta, I don't like.
It is. Yeah, it's garbage.
That's it. So I thought I'd just try with Twitter and met a few people and then just learned and read and went away and did stuff. Now, with everybody that gets, you know, woke or, you know, ignited, I think we should start using. I think ignited is a good word, because it ignites your passion as a patriot. And it's that less crazy, doesn't it?
that's a perfect word, because using, you know, things like red pill, those, you know, or awake or woke or whatnot, those are all terms that the left likes to
exactly 100%.
Twist and turn against you.
Yes.
You know.
And it's really difficult then, isn't it, to kind of think, because I find myself, and obviously with what I do as well, I couldn't just come out and say, right, I think this and I think that, because there have been colleagues of mine that had been, I'd heard stories of there being what we call gag orders in England, so you're not allowed to talk about things. Apologies if you know what I'm talking about. I don't know exactly.
Yeah, I do. Okay, I definitely do, yeah.
Right. So we heard stories of that, and it was like, oh, my friend said this, and it was, you know, a little photo of a message. So you never really knew whether it was true or not. So it was very, very difficult. And I was in quite a good position because I could speak to doctors on a regular basis and find out their thoughts and feelings about the whole situation, which we'll go into later on with regards to hydroxychloroquine and everything else. Mm-hmm. But at the beginning, I was just kind of thinking, oh, man, there's so much shit to read, especially when you're talking about all the, you know, I've realized very quickly there's levels. It's like a game, right? So you've got your spy gate and your, you know, Obama gate and pizza gate and everything kind of at the top. And then as you get lower and lower through the levels, you get more intense until you hit the bottom where you're like adrenochrome, Satanism, and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
So that's the levels. So getting back to the original. So I went to town to see my friend, to see him talk. And he was chatting about some bits and pieces, and it was great. And he'd handed out some flyers. And we had, there was a crowd of about 20, 30 people, which where I live is quite a lot, really. And they're all wondering what was going on and things. And people were coming over and talking and asking genuine questions. And then we had someone pop in from the right of me, and she was like, yeah, right, okay, so 5G is bad, Trump is going to save the world, and she just started going adrenochrome, and they're killing babies, and it was like, whoa. And she just came in, and you could literally just see everybody go, wow, who is this person? And she was going on and on and on. I was like, oh, this is not how we win people over in this situation. You know, you're just going to spew all this stuff at someone, and you're thinking, wow. So I kind of let her talk, and then people started talking about COVID and everything else. And that's when I said, you know, do you mind if I pipe up? And I started explaining who I am and my thoughts and everything. And then it turns out people were actually interested in what I had to say, which I never expected. So then I got asked on the back of that to do some shows with my friend on his radio station and stuff. And then I started thinking, I had a little bit more confidence in myself, thinking, actually, that's fine, finally. I think I found a use for my gob.
Exactly. For my big mouth. Right. And is that not the way things work too? Some things you just fall into, and it's the actual perfect thing that you're supposed to be doing at the perfect time.
Exactly. And I remember on the podcast, I think it was one of the earlier ones, Tommy was talking about, you know, he gets loads of messages talking about how can they help and how can they get involved. And he said, just keep hammering everybody, send them messages on the DMs and just make a nuisance of yourself. And I think that's kind of what I did with you, really. So,
which is good, though, because it's kind of like we instantly clicked, because I don't know. It's almost kind of like we're two peas in a pod in the you know, grand scheme of things, because we're so similar. Because you said at the beginning when you're talking about your background about, you know, working in the medical field, and you always say the right things to the wrong people. Mm. And people that listen to the show all the time know that that's the kind of person that I am. I've had doctors come at me sideways about things, and, you know, I am definitely not afraid to stand my ground and stick up for what I know is right.
100%.
And I've put several doctors in their place, several administrators in their place, because, and I hate to say this, I don't want to sound like a jackass, but you learn more information working directly with patients, like as a nurse or a medic or whatnot. They will tell you things that they don't want to talk to the doctor about.
Definitely, I definitely agree with you. I mean, look, you speak to doctors, and I'm sure it's the same over in the States as well. They're almost on the spectrum. We touched on this briefly, didn't we, last time we spoke? But they're on the spectrum. They're on like a different planet. I mean, they've been studying in education for nearly 10 years to get where they're at. You know, they're really socially inept, a bit socially awkward. And I've found there's two types of doctors. You've got the down-to-earth doctors, which actually are quite good, and they're a little bit more thinking outside the box and, you know, holistic view on things. Where, and then you get the other ones that are just on the spectrum, that just, they know every formulary, they know every drug, how it works down to a cellular level. And you think, well, that's great, but you can't talk to a patient.
Exactly. And bedside manner goes a really long way.
It does, 100%. Yeah, exactly. And I've realized that very quickly with being a paramedic, that because we're all a little bit more down to earth, we right. almost bridge the gap between, I don't like to say civilians, but like the general population to medical. We kind of translate the jargon. Not, I don't like to say dumb it down, because that's not what we're doing, but doctors forget that patients don't know the medical terminology for certain things, so they'll just spew it out and expect a patient to know what they mean.
Right. Right. And you're right about that, because they, a lot of times they speak so far above people's heads that normal everyday people are like, I don't, like, I shut my brain off because I don't know what the hell you're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you're talking to me like I'm a scientist, and I'm literally a garbage man. So yeah, I didn't understand anything you said. And that, and that's really, that becomes our job, where you can explain things to people in a manner that, that they can understand, because you kind of, do it empathetically, where you put yourself in their shoes and you're like, okay, how would I want to hear this?
Yeah, exactly, you know. That. And I always, but you wait till the doctor's left and then you tell them, don't you? That's the thing. You wait till the doctor's left the room and then you go, right, okay, this is what he means.
Right.
And they're like, oh, right, okay, right, I understand that now. So yeah, it's all a bit, it's a bit difficult sometimes trying to find, but with medicine anyway, sorry, I dart from left to right, apologies. I'm not
like, all right,
schizophrenic or anything. I've got one mouth and it doesn't speak quick enough, like, for my brain.
I know, I'm exactly the same way, and there's so many thoughts in my head all at one time, and sometimes it just may come out as babble, but you know.
Yeah, that's it.
I have a point. I'm trying to get there.
Yes, this is it. This is it. And I always get told, you talk so fast. I'm like, no, you listen too slowly. That's what it is. So you need to speed your listening up, and then we'll be absolutely fine. So it's a bit difficult in that regard. So anyway, so I carried on with my Twitter journey and just, you know, tweeting stuff and throwing up some articles and some information that I found. And you know, and I was conscious that people think Twitter is an echo chamber and things. So I was trying to put on things that I thought were relevant. And as a result of that, I ended up learning more about your politics in the States than I did in England. Because to be fair, for the first few months of the lockdown, the British public, the British government were quiet. They weren't saying nothing.
Right.
And all eyes was on the States, because, whoa, God, man, what is not going on over there? Honestly, it's just, it's so interesting and so like crazy, and it's so funny. It's not funny. I didn't mean it like that, because it's not funny. But I mean, it's so funny seeing everyone lose their fucking minds about this whole situation, you know? And it was, you know, the BLM stuff, and it was like, fucking hell, what's going on here? So I had to look into that, because obviously I didn't realize it had been something that had been coming up every sort of 4 years, and then, you know, where the money goes for that. And so to try and fucking navigate through all of that, I was like, right, you get, when you first kind of ignited, you think, right, I've got to fucking read the internet. I have to read the whole internet, and then I know everything, and then I'm fine. And then I realized very quickly, you can't fucking do that, because there's just too much.
Right.
And there's been people that have been on this scene for years. You know, I don't know them personally or anything, but you could just tell, you know, they've got hundreds of thousands of followers. The stuff they post is really kind of poignant and relevant, and things like that. So it's like, well, how do I, one, where are they getting their information from? How do you get, not that it was about followers, but how do you get that kind of following to spread what you're trying to spread? And it's tough, man. It's really tough, you know? So I just thought, you know what, rather than trying to worry about getting followers, just throw stuff out there and see what happens. And then, you know, that's when I just started throwing the things up and looking into it more. and then this leads me lovely into the whole gas station or petrol station scenario, which I think for me was my moment of like, fucking right, this is on. This is on like Donkey Kong.
So tell people about that incident. You can go to his page. It's at Kung Fu Medic. You can actually go, because he has these videos that we're going to talk about today on his page. They're also on mine, but they're probably buried down in my timeline quite a way. I'll try to link them after we post the show so that everybody can see it. But tell people what happened at the gas station.
So I was obviously doing my home visits during the day. I went to the petrol station to get some fuel. and I put the nozzle in the thing and the machine didn't turn on. So I was looking at the guy in the kiosk through the window. And then he came out on the tannoy saying, "You need to put your mask on." And I was like, "But I'm outside." And he said, "No, you've got to put your mask on before filling up." So I kicked off a little bit. I probably said some things I shouldn't have said across the forecourt, but I was so angry. And I had to remember I was in my uniform as well. So I was like, right, I'm going to have him. Not the intention of going in and kicking his head in, but I was like, right, we need to sort this out. Because I've been reading more and I felt a little bit more armed with things and stuff. So this was only a few months ago this happened. So I went in there and said, like, what's going on, mate? What are you doing? And I noticed on the till or the cash register that there was a little sign that said, if you don't wear a face mask, you get fined £200. And I was like, right. So I walked up, so right, I'll deal with that sign in a minute. But first of all, what are you doing? Not letting me fill up without a mask on. He says, well, you got to wear a mask. I said, not outside, I don't, mate. And he says, yeah, but when you come into the shop, we need to know you've got a mask. So I said, right, so you're making people wear masks outside because you're concerned that they won't have a mask to enter the shop with. And he said, yes. I said, well, what if they've got an exemption then? And then he looked at me as if to say, well, what's an exemption? I said, so what if someone is not, they don't have to medically wear a mask? And he says, well, they need to show me an exemption card. And I was like, well, no, they don't. They don't have to show you an exemption card. That's against the, I think it's the Disability Act in England, 1996. Right. And the Equality Act 2010, I think. Don't right. know what subsection. But basically, it's against the law. Not against the law, sorry. Only a position, a person of authority, like the police or something, can ask anything about your disability. And even then, you can be selective as to what you tell them because it's your medical
exactly.
history. So
that's yeah. the same thing. It goes for here too. Know your rights because like Walmart workers and stuff like that, they cannot ask you what your medical condition is because that is completely and totally against the Americans with Disabilities Act. You actually have a number that you can call that's hooked up with the DOJ. You can look that up. It's a real thing because if they violate your rights as a person with a disability, the DOJ can actually go after those people.
Exactly.
So
all of the
companies here in the United States that are doing that, just be aware of your rights. Walmart is one of the major violators because their security people will chase you down. So just be aware that exists. So anyway, on with your story.
Yeah. So then I said to him, what about people with exemptions? And then he said, yeah, I need to see an exemption card. And I said, well, no, you don't. And then from the back of the shop, two or three other people came out. And I think one was the manager or whatever. And he said, well, we've just been told to do this from the management. And that's when I was like, yeah, but did you not ask any questions as to, you know, why you were doing it? What was your authority? Was there a law or did you just do it without asking any questions? And then I said to, and I said the same thing on the video for the other thing we'll talk about later as well. I said, if someone said to you, every customer that walks into the shop, you've got a punch in the face, would you just unquestionably do it? Or would you just smack everyone, you know, or would you not ask a question and go, well, have I got a punch everyone in the face? So, you know, it was that kind of, I'm just doing what I'm told mentality. And I was like, yeah, but you don't understand the ramifications of that. So if someone did genuinely have an exemption, they'd have to walk all the way into the shop, queue up if there was a queue, then go to the till and say to the gentleman, right, I've got an exemption. And then you'd probably have a bit of an argument because they wouldn't show you an exemption card because there isn't an official exemption card, if you will.
Right.
There's things
That's
you can
true.
Print off from the internet and stuff that say I have an exemption, but there's no official exemption card because no such thing exists because it's not something you would normally right. have to tell anybody.
100%.
Exactly, yeah. So that was the concern. So they would, and then they'd have to queue up, whisper across to the gentleman, maybe have a bit of a confrontation or argument as to whether, you know, basically the bloke behind the till was almost like a gatekeeper, whether he allowed that person to fill up or not. And that shifts the power, the dynamic of power, doesn't it? Not that it should, but you give someone a tiny little bit of power in that scenario and, you know, they could abuse it. If they've not got, you know, if they've not been educated as to what the rules are for and why they're there, then, you know, they're just
blatantly saying, well, if you've not got a mask, you can't fill up.
Right.
You know, it's that lack of education on their part. And as a business, it was just, well, this is what we're going to do. And I just thought to myself, if someone was generally going in there for a reason, that for an exemption, and they're having to tell some random person behind the till that they had an exemption just to fill up, fill up with fuel. It was a whole
outside.
Thing. Yeah, outside.
Outside, I mean, mind
yeah,
you.
I know. And this is the thing. And then while all that was going on, I kept on looking at the sign that said you're going to be fined £200. So I pulled that off and said to them, I was like, who's going to enforce that? It's a piece of paper with a warning. Like, who's going to enforce it? You're going to fine me £200? And he said, well, we've just been told to put it there. I said, it's a piece of paper with you know, Sharpie written on it. Do you know what I mean? It's like, what are you doing, guys? And then they just kind of said, well, look, we were just doing, and I realized I got to the end of the conversation, you know, it's like, right, well, this is it. So I was furious because I was like, right, I was more angry at the situation. And I think I'm not stupid. I'm relatively intelligent. I like to think I could, and this is what started to worry me then. I was like, right, well, if this is happening here in Shell Garage or whatever the situation is, and people just blindly following rules, statements from management handed down, it's going to be a problem everywhere. And then I just felt really bad for the people that do have genuine exemptions from wearing masks, not just things like COPD, asthma, heart failure, and all the other bits, but people who've had some PTSD trouble, someone may have been abused, and they don't like masks on their face. And every time then someone asks them about, well, I'm not wearing a mask, they're getting a flashback.
Right, it causes trauma.
Exactly, exactly. And they're having to relive that every day and almost have to wear it as not a badge of honour, but just constantly have it there in the back of the head that they're going to have to throw it out to someone. Not what the actual thing is, but I've got an exemption. And most of the time, hopefully people just go, that's fine. But then if they make an issue of it, then while she's trying to defend herself, she's then got that recurring memory in the back of her mind of what went on all those years ago. And I just think
100%.
Exactly. So, you know, psychologically, if you're having to, you know, you try and put those thoughts to the back of your mind and put them in a box and things, it's constantly being ripped open, that box, because you're constantly going out worrying whether you're going to get challenged for not wearing a mask. And that just creates a whole world of other psychological problems and issues and concerns in people that are already having psychological and mental health issues because of the COVID situation. So I just couldn't get my head around that. So I was like, right, fuck this, man. I'm doing a video. And I did this video where I just had a fucking rant at Shell, asking them to educate their staff and everything else. And then I sent it to my friend who he's been doing this for a long, long time. And he's a lovely lad. I've only met him recently. He was at the talk I did in the town. And he was one of the guys that asked me to come with him. So I said to him, look, I don't want this all over my Facebook because of what I do. I've got to be careful. But I thought, you know what? I'm not saying anything that's wrong here. I'm not lying.
Right.
I'm not condemning COVID. This is exactly just what happened. So if all it does is raise awareness of people's rights and what they could be facing going forward with the mask mandate and everything else, then I thought, you know what, let's just get this out there. Anyway, so it went a bit mental. And I think it's had about, well, I say mental for someone like me who's not a superstar, had about 13,000 views and I think it was just shy of 1,000 shares on Facebook. It didn't do that well on Twitter, but then Twitter's a tough crowd, man, sometimes. Anyway, I've realized.
That's true.
So it only had about 1,000, 2,000 views on there, but it's the biggest thing I've ever done in my life with regard to social media. Not that I'm trying to, you know, get to that point, but so I didn't expect it to go as viral as it did.
And that's the thing is, some people don't understand that. Like, especially for me, I honestly don't care about the likes and the amount of, you know, friends and all that stuff. For me, even if I can bring awareness to one or two people about something that they didn't know before, those people that I just gave information to that was new to them are going to turn around and give that same information to two more people. And it's going to grow and grow and grow and grow. So it's not about like you make a video or you make a post and, you know, 100,000 people see it or whatever, and then you're a rock star. I really don't give a shit about that. If I can tell two people in the world something they didn't know and make them actually look for themselves, I'm going to pat myself on the back because that's good for me.
Exactly. And I think that video at the time, I put it out there, and then when I saw how much attention it was getting, I started to panic. So I thought, shit. And then I was looking
You're
at
like,
the video.
Oh,
and
good.
Yeah, I had to chop the
Now
end
I'm
of
a
it.
Target.
Yeah, well, this is it. And I thought, shit, I've got my NHS lanyard on. You know, I'm in my uniform. So I had to make sure for the video you couldn't see the badge. I had to crop right. the end of it off just tiny little bit because you could see the emblem. So I just thought, you know, I don't want any shit. I've heard so much stuff. Of like we said, of people having problems, mainly because though they're going on, we have peaceful demonstrations. We're trying to call it over here because we're not protesting. Right. We're trying to demonstrate peacefully. And we could be talking to more about that later, how we've not been allowed to do that really. But they've been going on the stage and talking, but basically just saying COVID is a hoax. Now, if you're a right. consultant and a doctor saying that, you're going to get struck off because you're going against the whole narrative and everyone's opinion in medicine, and you're putting a massive target on your back. Whereas if you go on and tell the truth, in a different way, where you're kind of trying to highlight their figures, their stats, they can't really say anything to you because you're like, well, this is what you put on your website, mate. This is the death count. This is the amount of people that are dying at this age of this, you know, and all this. So you can't condemn me or strike me off, or, you know, from my job or lose my registration to practice because you don't like what I'm posting because it's the truth. So that was my angle on the things. I thought, well, if I just try and say the truth, I don't call anyone individually any names, or, you know, so I thought, right, let me pick my words and we'll see what happens. So that video did that, and then, like I say, it was circulating. Thankfully, I asked him not to tag me in it, so it didn't circulate on my Facebook. But then I just started getting inundated with friend requests and messages and all these other kids, which is great, but I went from something like 400 friends on Facebook to now like 3,500. Granted, right. most of them are chicks trying to sell me pictures of them naked and robots and other bits and pieces, Illuminati stuff and all that. But every now and again, there's someone in there. And we spoke about this the other night. Try and respond to every single message with at least a thumbs up or a hello until you realize right. whether it's a bot or a real person or whatever. Because
right.
we were talking about this, and we'll talk about this more later. But, you know, it's important to know that there's someone at the end of the messages. So that video did that. And that's when I thought, right, okay, I could be onto something here. It was nice getting the messages of support. I had a few people in the medicine field message me on you know, directly on Facebook and things and say, look, you know, well done for speaking out and everything. So that was good. But what was funny is the day before, I was kind of, and as you can appreciate going through this journey that we've been going through, you have days where you're really like, I'm going to fucking kick the shit out of everybody today. I'm going to find the biggest, you know, conspiracy. I'm going to fucking blow the lid on all this shit and I'm going to save the fucking world. And then you have other days when you're just like, I'm fucking scared. I don't want to think about this anymore. It's fucking doom and gloom. And, you know, and it's up and down. And you think, fucking hell.
Yeah.
So I've been doing, I mean, when you study, as you can appreciate, you're used to reading, you're used to fucking trawling through loads of bullshit stuff and trying to pick out what's relevant and what's not. And this is where it's been really hard with what's going on at the minute. Because no matter what evidence you pick out, someone goes, well, that's fucking bollocks, isn't it? And you think, well, why is it? Oh, it's because it's written by this geezer and someone says he's a twat. All right, well, that doesn't mean he's not right, though. And so it's really, so even now you're having to justify the sources. And it's like, well, fucking hell, we never had to do that before. If it just came from this credible source, it was fine. But because what we're trying to talk about isn't the current narrative, we're never going to find a Harvard-style reference fucking journal that basically says everything that we're trying to say to everybody. And it's referenced and endorsed by every single scientist and doctor, because that's not what's going on. So then you realise, you know, fucking hell, right, we've got to do some shit here. And that's when, like you say, it's just about trying to circulate the information. And what I found is rather than trying to... So the way I describe it is, we talked about this again, everyone's in their little bubbles, aren't they? They're like, I can't remember what the term is when they're in those inflatable balls. Is it more football or morphing or something like that? You know, the inflatable balls that you can roll around in? Morph balls?
Yes. Almost like an enclosed hamster wheel where people just run around in their
bouncing
bubble.
Off shit, and you don't give a fuck what's going on. You're smacking into other people's balls and, you know, their lives. But you're all in your own little bubbles, you know, going along, minding your own fucking business, right? So when you start trying to say to people, right, by the way, all this shit's going down. The government's been lying to you. There's fucking loads of child stuff going on and on top of COVID. It's almost like you're going into that ball and fucking pulling them out into the real world, and sometimes they don't appreciate you doing that. They don't like it because you've burst their bubble. And once you've burst their bubble, you can't then blow it back up again. And I had this experience with my wife, which I didn't expect to happen, obviously. And I told, you know, we both kind of got ignited or illuminated at the same sort of time for other bits and pieces for reading. My wife's, you know, she's smart and I talk her face off all the time, so she had no choice. And initially at the start, she was quite happy. She was like, yeah, this is great. You know, we're going to do this. And then a few weeks later, she just broke down and was like, I'm so angry that you woke me up. I'm so scared. And I you know, she was really genuinely upset about it because she couldn't just forget about it. So I wasn't prepared for that. So I was like, shit. And that for me was like, well, that's my wife. And she's fine now. She's dipping her toe in and out and all that kind of stuff. But she's a bit of a warrior, my wife. But we also don't appreciate working in medicine as well, that you're so used to just having a shit shift where people die and you see so much shit that's awful. And then you go home and then you switch off, hang your scrubs up, put them in the bin or the wash and chill out and then do it again the next day. And the military was the same. You know, you did what you did. So you have to be able to leave your shit at the door. Otherwise it will spill out into your family life and all that kind of stuff. And that's not fair. So you have to be able to just put it in a box and you forget.
And you know, that's like the perfect thing because Greg and I had that conversation the other day where he's like, you know, he's like, I always thought I was really intelligent and I was, you know, really, really brilliant. And he's like, and I found out this year that I actually learned more this year than I've ever learned. He's always been pretty in tune and awake to stuff, but he's learning things leaps and bounds this year and you can't unlearn. And so the thing is, you know, you can wake up yourself or wake up other people, but then you can never go back to unknowing.
You
know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
you can't. Yeah. After you're awake, you can't go back to being asleep ever again because it's like a constant barrage and a bombardment of actual knowledge, which is great that you're learning all that stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's also bad at the same time because, like I said, once you're awake, you can't go back to sleep. You can't unknow or unlearn.
Unlearn stuff. You can't, can you? And that's the thing. And no matter – what I realized quickly is – people have had their own reasons and motivations for being illuminated into looking into stuff, which I was. So I found with some people, and this is, so going back to the video real quick, I obviously got inducted into the kind of the social media aspect of what this is all about. I had other people with larger accounts getting in contact and sharing my videos and talking and stuff. And then I started watching their stuff and it was okay. But again, not that I'm picking fault in anything that anyone's doing, but I thought it was very aggressive. You're calling everyone stupid for not being awake, you know, and you're just being quite aggressive about it. You know, you're all fucking sheep and you all need to wake up. And it's like, fucking hell, why is everyone shouting at everyone? And then I was going to these rallies as well. You know, well, rallies, these protests and listening to people speak. And all they were doing was shouting at me about shit I already knew. Your government is lying to you. I fucking know all this shit. Why didn't you start telling me what we're going to do about it? Or, you know, so I thought, well, I'm not going to go to these marches anymore, not because I don't want to show solidarity and support, but because I don't want people to shout at me shit I already know. What I want is someone to go, this is what we're going to do, or this is what we're going to try and do. And the David Icke and all the other ones that we have over here, I think we have David Icke, we have Greg Hallett, who's allegedly supposed to be the actual
throne. The King of England. Yeah.
Yes, yeah, which lots of people are trying to discredit. But I fell into that recently as well. I mean, I've done more fucking reading these last sort of 7-8 months than I've done in my fucking 4 or 5 years of degrees in medicine and all sorts of shit because I'm interested in shit, in this stuff.
So let me ask you a question real quick. What was your, like, aha moment? What was the time when you actually, you know, woke up and were like, oh my God, like, I need to start looking into stuff because something's not right. Was it the COVID thing or was it something before that?
It was a little bit of both. I think it was almost like, I'm trying to think because I've always been a bit, had this kind of mentality where, and I don't know if people, I love people, but I don't like people, right? And it's weird. And
I agree.
Yeah, exactly. And I know lots of people who work in medicine that are like, look, I've got to look after you, but I don't want to spend all my time with you. So, because people are brilliant, they're awesome, but, you know, sometimes they wear you down. They're there for a reason, trying to see you. So they sap your energy and it's difficult to try and keep people upbeat and positive and all this kind of stuff. You know, you're not going to die, you're going to be fine. So you go and mentally exhausted, so you can't be bothered going to the pub. Anyway, so it was doing those sorts of things. So my journey through university was a bit difficult because I just used to ask questions. And I don't mean to, but I sound aggressive. And I don't mean to. And my voice resonates, so it always sounds like I'm shouting. And I find it really hard to not just talk how I normally talk. And then people would get upset when I'd ask them questions because I'd asked it in a fucking way they didn't like. And I was just pissed off with everyone being, like I said to you, everyone having a vagina. Do you know what I mean? It's like, fucking hell.
No, and I agree with you. And we're the same in that aspect. And you know what it is? It's critical thinking skills.
100%, yeah. Definitely.
Which they don't teach in school anymore. Those are things that are learned behaviors. Yeah. And so, especially being in the medical field, question everything. I'm like a sponge. Like, the more information I can soak up, the better.
Yeah.
But I'm never one of those people that's like, oh, okay, well, you told me to do X, Y, and Z, so I'm going to do that and not ask you why. It's kind of like your analogy where you said, you know, twice now that if you were told to like slap every customer in the face, would you do it? I might if I was having a shitty day. No, I'm kidding. I would not do that. But yeah, there are times where I've envisioned punching someone in the face because you ask a question and then they go insane on you because you asked a question. Because you're not supposed to question. They don't want you to question. They want you to stay blind and dumb and oblivious to absolutely everything around you.
And this is it. So. And that's what I during the military, my school career, my schooling and my military career, I was fine in that environment because in the army, you just say how it is. You don't need to sugarcoat it because you're all fucking men. You do what you got to do. So, you know, you didn't need to, I'm not saying we were mean, but that's just the way it was. It was only when I went to uni, that's when everyone started to critique my attitude, which I'd never had before. And everyone's, you know, well, my form tutors, which are like your module leader type things for university, were always getting complaints from lecturers and stuff, right, saying that I was disruptive in class and all that. And I was like, why am I disruptive? Because I'm just asking you a question. And because I would ask, you know, a couple of questions, and I'd always ask the questions that everyone wanted to ask but didn't want to because they thought it was too stupid. And I was always said, you know, the only stupid question is one not asked. And I've got no qualms in asking those questions. So I just ask them. It's like, well, you need to know, ask the questions. And then it became my attitude was a concern and an issue. And I was like, I don't give a fucking shit about my attitude. I'm not here to learn about my attitude. I'm here to learn about medicine. So just fuck off. I don't need no, you know, because I was 30 when I went to uni, I was like, I'm not fucking 18. Do you know what I mean? I've been to fucking war. I don't need you telling me how my attitude is. So I just got so frustrated with the system because then it felt like then I was being personally attacked. My grades were always low, even though people's work I knew wasn't as good as mine. So it was almost like I was constantly being punished because I had this personality or persona that people just like Marmite. I don't know if you've heard of Marmite. We have it over here. Right. Uh-huh. So you either love me or you hate me. And that's what the motto is for Marmite. You either love it or you don't. So it was really difficult. Anyway, they made my journey through uni quite difficult. And then I obviously completed uni, settled in the ambulance service perfectly because the type of person I am. But again, in the ambulance service, I was getting more problems from the staff and the management than I was the patients. I was getting chocolates and thank you letters from the patients, but I was getting complaints from staff because I'd always challenge them on the clinical decisions and ask, you know, why you've done this and why you've done that and everything else.
Exactly.
And then I just got a bit of a reputation for myself. So after a few years of being in the ambulance service, they kind of just basically said, we think you should leave, okay? And I was like, you know what? I think I should too. And it was the best thing I ever did because I went in there so passionate about medicine. I was trying to change the wheel and I couldn't understand why people didn't have the holistic view on, you know, if one person left one patient at home on the ambulance. So we get sent to so much shit on the ambulances, right?
It's
not always, you know, shootings and all this brilliant, sexy stuff that people see on the TV and that. It's a lot of it's just bullshit, but they've said the right word to trigger an ambulance. So you go in there and my ethos was if I leave you at home, then that saves you going to hospital. Now, if everybody did that in the trust, you got about 30 trucks on, that's 30 more patients potentially that can be left at home. That's 30 beds saved, you know, and it goes on and on and on. But people just didn't think like that. They'd just take them to hospital. And I was like, fuck, what are you doing? It's not a fucking taxi service. So I just used to get really frustrated with them thinking that you're moaning about being busy and getting sent to shit, but then you're bringing shit into the hospital as well. So you're not going to
exactly get- and one of the big things, like, here as far as that goes, is the amount of drunk people.
Oh, you get that as well then. Okay.
Drunk people. You know, people that are on like a high from magic mushrooms or tripping on LSD or whatnot. Those are not patients that need to be taken to the hospital, but because you have the medical industrial complex, that is a big thing where the more patients the ambulance service can take to the hospital, they charge here per ambulance. And then a lot of times the ambulance services are not contracted with patients' insurance. And so they're collecting either insurance money or they're collecting private pay, which could be, you know, $3,700 on an ambulance ride 2 blocks to the hospital. And then you're also creating, when you take those people to the hospital, even though they're drunk, they just need to fucking sleep it off and, you know, sober up. Then you're also creating income from the hospital. And when you create income for the hospital, then you have the doctors at the hospital who have to see the patients and all the unnecessary testing that is then done to find out the patient is actually just drunk. So you just created the ambulance patients' money. You created the money for the hospital. You created money for the doctors. You created money for the lab technicians. You created money in the whole medical industrial complex just because you picked up a drunk patient. That's the way it works.
Yeah,
I am not shitting people. That is how the shit works.
Yeah. Well, it's slightly different in England. We have the NHS, which we don't have to pay for our healthcare. We're very, very lucky. And I know the Americans view it as really bad because we have waiting times and all that kind of stuff. But then obviously you only hear the bad things. You don't hear about all the countless hip replacements, all the stents they put in, all the DVTs they get rid of, you know, all the other things that they do day in, day out for millions and millions of patients. You never hear about that. You just hear about the long waiting times and things. So we are very lucky. Our NHS is relatively good. I know everyone says it's it's crumbling. It's never crumbled. Okay. It's just people take the piss because it's free. So it's difficult educating the public and when and where to use the services, which has always been a challenge. But we're funded by the NHS, and I can't remember the exact, I think it's the CCGs, which is the Clinical Care Quality Commission group or something like that. They're responsible for distributing the money for the different states or the different counties we have. And we have different ambulance services, different counties, same as you guys, really. I said it's the state that funds it. But the state don't give them money to leave patients at home. They only give them money to take them to hospital. So there was never an incentive to leave patients at home. So you
100%.
Go to the, yeah. So you'd see the patient and you'd be there 20 minutes and the control would be ringing you saying, what are you doing? Hurry up, hurry up. And you're trying to sort this patient out and not take them to the hospital, make them feel safe, leave them a care package to keep them going through the day or the night, you know, and do all that kind of stuff. But they just wanted you to pick them up, load them and then go and just, you know, conveyor belt type scenario. So I felt like I was enabling the situation. I'll just get myself so frustrated with the whole thing. And I just became really kind of, people used to hate coming to, because I worked on the car on my own as well towards the end of my service career. And people used to hate coming to back me up because they just used to, I'd shout at them for not coming in with a stretcher or whatever. Even though I said, bring a stretcher. It's a red backup. Why are you walking in here with your hands in your pockets? I told you I've got a cardiac arrest. So it's just that frustration, which completely vanished when I left. And then I did what I did with the, what I'm doing now with all the various other bits and pieces, but going back to your original question, sorry, what exactly, do you know what? It was that other video that we'll talk about shortly that cemented it for me, because the Shell Garage thing, I think was just a scenario, but that other video we'll talk about was like, fucking hell, there's some fucking shit going on here. So
tell them about that video, because I am highly concerned. As soon as I saw that and you posted that, I'm like, ooh, red flags went up for 100%. Me like you would not believe. So tell them about the other video that you did that you posted what was going on there.
I'll give you some context. So my friend that I told you that initially shared my first video, he went to see one of these other kind of complexes that we're going to talk about in a different county. And he went to video and he got the same response as what I'll talk about shortly. So I thought to myself, well, I'm sure I'll drive past one of them where I work, you know, doing the home visits out and about. And I thought, I'll nip in and have a look on the back of my friend's video. So I thought, well, let's just try and clear up some concerns here. So I hadn't planned on it happening like that at all. And then this is what made me think this is what I'm supposed to be doing now, is the day before, and I think it was a couple of days before, I actually posted a tweet saying, I'm having a break because I just need a break. I'm feeling tired, emotionally drained, and I'm going to have a break. And then the next day, that all happened, and I was like, I ain't fucking having a break. So it was almost like when I tried to kind of hang everything up or take a break, that happened, which I'll tell you now, instead of building it up to be something that is too big, I don't over, you know, push it too much. But so basically, I drove past this thing, and it looked like you could see loads of white tents, trestling fencing, you know, it looked like a complex, like a fucking some sort of industrial military complex. So I drove past it and thought, fuck, I'm going to have a look here. And I pulled into the right at the top of the road. And there was a road leading down into the complex, which was about 100 metres, 200 metres away from where I initially parked. So I wasn't in anyone else's property or anything like that. I was on the main road, you know, perfectly allowed to do that. And I got my camera out and my phone out and started trying to film it from at the top of the hill. Now, the video doesn't do it justice with how fucking big this is, and I'm tempted to go and try and get a better video, but I don't know. And as I was...
I would be careful.
Fuck it, I know, right? So as I was recording, I was chatting in the video, just saying, look at this fucking complex here. I could see security running up the road to me, about 200 metres, but fucking sprinting, not just jogging, fucking sprinting. So I thought, right, I'm going to get in the car here, obviously. Got in the car, and I said on the video, like, you know, I think security coming. And you can see on the video that as they approach, they can see me filming them, and then they try and start to walk as if they weren't running towards me. You know, when you've been busted doing something, and they're like, just minding my own business. And I called them out. I said, what are you running for, lads? What are you running towards me like the police? And they were really hostile. Like, well, you're not allowed to film it. I said, I can film here, mate. I can film wherever I want. It's a public road. You can't stop me filming. It's not against the law. Anyway, you've got to watch the video to get the context. So they were being quite agitated about it. So I put the phone down, but still kept it on record. And then they started getting quite aggressive, as in, like, you need to delete the video. I said, no, I don't. I don't need to delete the video at all. I don't need to delete the video. So what happened then is about six security guards then circled my car and stopped me from leaving where I was. And I was on a public road. I wasn't in anyone's complex or anything like that. And they wouldn't move out of the way. And I literally had six of them all around the front of the car. And you can hear the sensor on the front of the car going off because he's so close to my car. My car says, and they wouldn't let me move. So they basically kept me there hostage. So the whole video is like 9 minutes. That's why I couldn't upload it, because Twitter obviously is a twat and doesn't let you upload minutes over whatever. So I was trying to get out, put it in two parts and everything else. But so they were there. I was there for about 5 minutes or so. And what they started to do then, when I wasn't going to give in, I knew my rights, I wasn't scared, I was fine. They moved out of the way. And then as I went to go forward, they'd then throw themselves back in front of the car. And then they did that twice and kept on then saying, why are you running over my friend? Why are you running over my friend? And I'm like, I'm not running over your fucking mate.
And I was going to say, and you can clearly see that on video, that you started moving and that guy immediately jumped in front of your car.
Exactly.
And the other guy's going, oh, you hit him. You hit him. And you're like, no, I didn't.
So that went on video.
Exactly.
That was it. So unfortunately, you can only see my face because I had the camera in the footwell. And I wish I think it all happened so quick. I kind of was more concerned that I might have to fight six blokes here. So I wanted to keep my phone out of my hands.
Right. Exactly.
So I knew I was, you know, well within my rights to film. So anyway, that went on for literally about 9 minutes. And I said, get out of the fucking way. What are you doing? And then I was like, all right, phone the police then. Phone the police and get them here, because I'm sure you'll be in more fucking trouble than I am. I said, you're not allowed to do this, mate. It's fucking kidnapping. They were stopping me from leaving. And then what happened then is a woman pulled in and she started filming what was going on. And then as soon as they saw her filming, they just dispersed away from my car. And then I heard something, and this is the thing as well. I heard something in another language on the radio, And then they let me go. And I pulled up the road and I saw the woman there. And she's like, are you all right, mate? I said, yeah, not a problem. She said, I've got that all on film. So I was like, fucking, you sending me that then? And she very kindly sent me the video from what she saw. Now, you get just the last little bit. You can just see them at the beginning of her video around the car, and then they disperse quite quickly. But there was about six of them. So, and then obviously, then we went. So that whole scenario, I mean, you watch the video and it's a lot more fucking dramatic than that. But my fucking heart was right. going, and everyone's like, you're not scared. I was like, I was all right, because I knew I was more anxious because I thought I was going to have to get out of my car and fight some people. That's what it was, you know? And I thought, these guys need to get out of my way. But the thing that concerned me the most is fucking, I literally got out of the car to film the complex, and I was out of my car for maybe 5 seconds, and they were running up the fucking road.
Right.
And that was what concerned me.
And it was quite a distance.
Yeah, it was about fucking 200 meters, weren't it? That's the thing, because it was on a hill. I didn't need to go close because I could film it over the top of the hill. Right. And they fucking flew up that road, and then, you know, we're like, what are you doing? You're not allowed to film. And I was like, I am allowed to film. And they said, no, you're not. I said, why am I not allowed to film? He said, well, people could be getting tests. And I said, mate, they're in a fucking tent, right? I can't see no one getting tested. Now, going into a bit of detail of the site, it was, it was fucking large. It was about the size.
Yeah.
So where it is, it's opposite a football stadium. I don't want to say too much because, but it's opposite a football stadium. So it's the parking that they use for soccer. Sorry, not football, for soccer. So the car park's fucking massive, basically, to allow for, 40,000 fans going. So it filled up most of that. Now, there was some white tents that I couldn't see inside of, about six of them next to each other going along in a line. And then it had about another three white tents next to it with the sides up. But what was fucking weird is they had, like, you know, when you go to theme parks and they've got the metal barriers that are like zigzagging, you know, so you can queue.
Right.
They had that in the open-sided tents. So it was almost like they're expecting to have a load of fucking people waiting there to do something.
Right.
So it was really unclear as to what it was. And I did some research with some people that live there and work there and stuff, and they told me that it's always been it was one of the very first mobile testing sites that they set up, but they moved it later on. But the person that told me this is someone I'm desperately trying to illuminate or ignite anyway, because she needs to. So she was very much, oh, it's just a testing site. And I was like, it's fucking massive. Do you know what I mean? It's not, right. And I've seen the mobile testing sites, and it's a little fucking gazebo with some little crap stood underneath it with a little shield on, passing the test, and the car drives in and drives out. You know what I mean? Not a fucking industrial military complex thing.
Right. And that's what I was going to say. That's the first thing that I said to you when you posted that video. I was like, that looks like a military industrial complex. It looks like a base.
Yeah.
And when you have those, and everybody knows, like, that's ever been to, Disney or any kind of theme park, and they have those, little paths that you have to follow in the railing and, where you zigzag in line and whatnot. I want you to think about something. And these stories are going in the news. There's videos. People are releasing documents from their governments, etc. there is one actually from Canada, from a lady that I follow. She has an amazing YouTube channel that's called What's Her Face.
Yeah, she's good.
She posted articles. These are that came off the government website. Where the government is building detainment and internment camps. They're going up in the UK. They're already all over Australia. Melbourne is a big area, which I'm hoping to get my friend from Melbourne on here soon so that he can tell you about that as well. But these documents released from the own government website was requesting for bids for building management and the maintenance or running of the facilities. And their stated purpose is for COVID or, quote, other detainment. Now, think about what I just said again. Detainment and internment camps. If you don't know what an internment camp is, look it up. It's not a good place. And it states again for COVID or other detainment. So they literally had one member of the parliament, and I think his name was Sims, that was asking questions on the floor of the parliament about these documents from its very own government up there in Canada. And he said, you know, what are the other stated purposes and why is it an internment camp? And, you know, what's the purpose of this, et cetera, et cetera. You know, they kind of blew off the question. So he asked a follow-up question. They literally told him to sit down. And they moved on to the next question. They don't want you to know about this. And I'm sorry to say this, but I posted a thread on Twitter quite a while back about the same kind of thing with internment camps and the purchase of guillotines and the new coding stuff for the use of public beheadings and guillotines and accepted, you know, put in place by Barack Obama and then, you know, accepted by the World Health Organization into the regular CPT procedural coding. Now, why in anybody's right mind would you need to build, quote, internment camps all around the world? And they're like these massive secretive facilities that they're threatening to arrest you or, you know, threatening your safety and your well-being just for trying to video and get information on the stuff that's literally on your own government's website.
And this is the thing, is that when you listen to the video, when you're watching the video, he asks the second question and you can hear someone shouting from almost in the back seats of the courtroom or whatever, shouting something, and then you hear the Speaker of the House saying, okay, no more questions. So it's almost like someone else told him to tell him to shut up.
Right.
And I don't know whether I need to watch it again, but I'm sure he turned around and said at one point that they've been very good at isolating people, but on occasion they've found people that were supposed to be isolating and they've had to then detain them.
Remove them from their homes.
That's right. Yeah. And detain them for the remainder. But they didn't finish off with, because I think he was trying to say, well, where are you detaining them? And I think we all knew where they were going to say, which is when they pretty much cut off, didn't they? Because I had to watch it twice. I was like, hang on a minute.
And that's the thing is that a lot of these countries around the world, I mean, I'm sure everybody's seen the videos circulating all over Twitter and stuff from Melbourne, where they're actually kicking in people's front doors and arresting them because they went to a protest, a peaceful protest, mind you, not the protests like we're seeing on the news here every day, which are not protests in any way, shape, or form. They're actual chaotic anarchists that are, you know, setting fires and looting and rioting and shooting people in broad daylight, because that's acceptable now. And anybody that shoots, you know, a Trump supporter or somebody that is not out setting fires and rioting and looting and burning down homes and businesses, we're not going to set bond for those people, and they should serve no jail time because that's acceptable behavior to murder people in broad daylight that don't agree with you.
Well, and this is the thing. So it's over here, we're a lot more reserved, us British folk, which annoys me at times because I just want everyone to get mad and angry about some shit every now and again because it's just good for the soul. But when we went to my friends went down to the Trafalgar Square gathering, which is London, obviously our capital. I think we didn't have great numbers. I think it was about 40,000,
right?
Which isn't too bad, but we have a lot of silent majority in England that will hopefully do something when you know they get to the point where they've had enough. But right. it was advertised as a peaceful protest, peaceful gathering. There were some speakers there, David Icke, Piers Corbyn, and some other people and stuff. And
everybody here knows David Icke.
Yeah. So I think he's controlled opposition, to be honest with you, which we can talk about if you like. But I think because I'm late to the party, I've got a bit more of a fresh take on everyone. Everyone's like equal, if that makes sense. I know David Icke's been around. God, he's been around for ages. But I think to myself, the amount of time he's been around, mate, what have you done? He tells everybody what's going to happen or what could happen, but he's done nothing, in my opinion. He's just, again, telling everyone what's going to happen. It's like, well, that's great, mate. What do we do about it, bro? But then what I think is controlled opposition is because he then says all these very sensible things and he's a good speaker. But then he then will say something about the fact that, you know, and I'm on the fence with this, that he starts talking about, obviously, that we're ran by, you know, reptilian people and lizard people and all this kind of stuff.
I agree. I agree.
So then
I agree with you 100%.
So you then think, right, mm-hmm. So what happens with that then? It's people only remember the lizard people part. So if you then turn around and say, well, I support David Icke, says, oh, you support lizard people. No, I support the fact he's been fucking doing this shit for 40 years and he's not been wrong so far. But because he says that shit, it almost discredits everything else. So if you support David Icke, then you just class as a nutter. So that's why I think he's controlled opposition, in my opinion, obviously.
Right. And I tend to agree with that because, you know, people have done that to me before where, and take, for instance, like the No Mercy crew. Mm. And, you know, some of them believe in aliens and reptiles and stuff. My opinion of things is definitely opposite of some of the things that they believe. And it's like, oh, well, you're on the show. So, you know, you're just as crazy as they are because you believe in blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, when have you ever heard me say that?
Yeah. But you get tarred with the same brush, don't you? That's what people do.
Yeah.
And that's what's really difficult to kind of – and that is, again, why it's so difficult to encourage people to listen to what he got to say. I mean, my dad, he's the hardest critic I've met so far at the moment with all of this. And he's the person I go to all the time with things because I want to see his opinion. And I'll always want that because he is the hardest critic. And I don't think he will ever say this. Yeah, I believe you. And I kind of don't want him to because it keeps me on my toes and it stops me, you know, reading an article and then being like, God, this is 100%, you know, I'll send it to my dad and he'll be like, well, it's a sensationalized article. And you're like, well, yeah, but then they all are. You could argue that, you know?
And it's the same thing with like all of the quote studies that come out, you know, proving coronavirus this or proving, you know, Earth is really round or, you know, whatever it is. Data can be easily manipulated.
Oh, God, yeah.
Science is easily manipulated. Those are things that normal everyday people control. Normal everyday people are very fallible. If you're paid enough money, you're going to make your data show whatever it is that the people are paying you want to see. But I want to say, you know, you talked about in the beginning, like getting information, you know, from all kinds of people in the medical community about, you know, the death certificates and what's been going on there. And I have literally spewed about that for hours and hours and hours on end. I've talked about it on multiple Periscopes before. And I want people to know it is really hard to and here's the thing. I used to work in the morgue at the hospital, and I used to be an autopsy assistant. That's something I probably never told anybody on one of the shows before. But when you have a body come in that was badly burned, like say in a house fire, that is not going to be mistakable for COVID.
No.
You know what I'm saying? No, that is burning flesh. If you smell burning flesh or burnt flesh, you will never forget that smell as long as you live. And so for people in the morgue being told, well, I know they died in a house fire, but we're going with this COVID narrative right now. So can you put COVID on the death certificate as the cause of death? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Those are that is shit you cannot make up. Somebody comes in and they're literally as fluorescent yellow as a highlighter. You already know what is wrong with that patient, but when they come in and be like, well, you know, we're really this COVID thing, and we get more money if you put COVID on the death certificate. And then we can send those numbers of COVID deaths to the state, you know, or you got somebody that ran off the cliff in their car and like got decapitated and stuff, and they're missing their head and missing their limbs, but you're told to mark it as a COVID death. People, I just want you to know, wake the fuck up, because the numbers are horseshit. Like we talked about on one of the previous shows, the quote, new number of wink cases. But you forget like how many people are tested multiple times a week. And they're counting each one of those tests as a quote new case. And they're not.
Exactly. They're doing, I don't know if they're doing it over in the States as well, but they're leaving out the death count. So what they're doing now is they're saying, oh, we've had 55,000 new cases. And that's it. Right. And you're like, well, okay, well, right. How many of them are hospitalized? How many of them are dead or dying? Or how many of them have no symptoms? And I think 90% of them will have no symptoms, which then makes every, from a medical point of view, think, well, if everybody's walking around like they're suggesting, who are asymptomatic or having no symptoms but still testing positive, then clearly they have natural immunity. So right. The more people we're testing that have no symptoms are naturally immune. So it's like if you tested everybody in the country or the world for some other kind of link, like chickenpox. Do you call it chickenpox? Herpes, yes. Zoster with you guys. Herpes, yes. Varicella, mm-hmm. Sorry. Right. And everybody should have that because they had it when they were a kid most of the time. So right. What does that mean? Oh, we've got everybody's tested positive for chickenpox. Yeah, but we're all right though, mate. You know, we've had it. We've got the antibodies. So right. It's just getting people to kind of question it a little bit more. If more and more cases are coming up, but the deaths are down, trust me, if the deaths are up, they'll be shoving that shit in your face. If the deaths were up yeah. like before.
And here's the thing. Everybody in every area that you live, and I'm sure it's the same in the UK, but you can actually look up your health statistics for your area and see like what your population is, what the actual cases are, et cetera, et cetera. The number of deaths, you can divide that and get your survival rate.
Yes.
And most of the time it's 99.8% or 99.98%. So you have a 0.02% chance in my area where I live of surviving COVID.
And this is the thing, isn't it? What did they do here? With the death certificates, it was within 6 months. So if you had a positive test within 6 months, they were putting COVID on the death certificate. So people got wise to that.
And that's falsification of records.
Well, totally, 100%, 100%. Yeah. And then they then said, okay, then, well, we'll reduce it to 28 days. So if you've had a positive test within 28 days, which is a month, you can still get put down as COVID if you've been, you know, anything else happens. So they're not really, you know, it's so easy to manipulate numbers when you've got this many people. You know, it doesn't take much to fudge the figures. But people, the biggest thing the government did was convince the people that we need a government. And now everybody just believes everything that the government tell us and don't question it.
And that is the last organization on the planet that you should believe. And I don't know if you saw this or not, but our lovely, World Health Organization, you know, who's been a bumbling, fumbling bunch of fucking moronic baboons. Anyway, today they reversed course on lockdowns and said that it's come to their attention that lockdowns are actually bad and that you're causing poor people to be poorer and you're causing sick people to be sicker. And I'm sitting here thinking to myself, Greg's reading me the article this morning, and I'm sitting here thinking to myself, does anybody with even one little iota of common sense, would that have not been your first thought that if somebody's already poor and you lock down and close their business where they work at, and so they lost their job, they can't feed themselves, they lost their home because, you know, a really long time for any kind of monetary help. Would it not strike you as odd that a normal person would not be like, yeah, no, yeah, like I don't have any money. I'm really poor. I'm struggling to survive as it is. Then you shut down the business where I work at. So I lost my job. Then I lost my house. Then we don't have enough money for food. Yeah, that made my situation worse.
And it's
like, hello, it took them almost a fucking year to realize that's a problem. Are you got to be kidding me?
They know what's going
on. And these are the health experts that you're not ever supposed to question, who also said at the onset, don't wear a mask. You don't have to wear a mask. It's not important to wear a mask. It's not going to protect you. And then Bill Gates was like, oh, yes, you got to tell them, blah, blah, blah. And so then they change course and they're like, oh, my God, every mask are important. Lockdowns are dumb. Oh, Bill Gates said, no, lockdowns are great. We're going with the lockdown scenario. That's what we got to do. And so they're being told literally every step of the way, every waking moment and every breath that they take, they're being told what to do because Bill Gates is their largest funder. Bill Gates has been talking about the coronavirus pandemic that was going to hit the United States since his TED Talk, since Event 201, since the, you know, global pandemic preparedness, blah, 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 that goes all the way back to 2013, people. Wake the fuck up. Do some research because the same jackasses that are greasing their palms with the money from the government and from private donations and et cetera, they all work for the same foundations. All of them.
And this is what I found when I looked into Bill Gates as well, because you think to yourself, what has he done medicine-wise to have such an influence on everything? And then you realize he doesn't.
He doesn't. He's okay. And this is the analogy. And Matt and I talked about this the other day. Okay. So Bill Gates invented Microsoft, you know, huge success, huge computer company, et cetera, et cetera. And then, oh my God, lo and behold, your computer got a virus injected by Bill Gates himself. And then Bill Gates can turn around and sell you the cure for the virus that's in your system, in your computer system. It is no different than your human body system because Bill Gates has been working on the vaccines and the big pharma drugs and stuff. I've talked about this before. He's been involved from the get-go in all of these world forums and Event 201 and all of these other things. And then lo and behold, this virus that he knew was going to hit in 2020 that we're not prepared for, but it's going to hit in 2020 and it's going to be a coronavirus. And lo and behold, it hits. And then lo and behold, who is it that's working on the vaccines to treat you? Because who owns a lot of the vaccine manufacturing companies or stocks in or the World Health Organization or has hands in developing PPE or, you know, water supplies, food supplies, etc. It's all the same people. And I'm astounded that people don't see the connection. He did the same thing with the computers that he's doing to your life on a daily basis.
I think, Janet, half the time people just aren't looking, are they? I mean, I myself was the same. You just accept things the way they are. You just don't question stuff in that regard. You know, you just don't think that you know what you're talking about. You know, when you think of the government officials, the MPs, members of parliament that we call them over here, that, you know, this is their job. They're supposed to do this. They're supposed to do that. But then no matter who you vote in, nothing changes because it's all a corporation, isn't it? And they don't want it to change.
Right.
They want
it
is. You know, they want everything to stay the same and it's all about earning money. And then people.
It is. It's a huge racket. And then that's their thing. They will post the most fallible information and like the biggest lie that you've ever heard on the face of the planet. And so many people know it's not true, but they're too lazy to actually go look, you know, and find the source, or other people that are just too lazy, period, to actually look for themselves and know that it's a lie. And that's what they want.
Yes.
They want you to be stupid, lazy, and incompetent, because the more stupid, lazy, and incompetent you are, the more you'll depend on them for your source, everything, health, wealth, medical, you know, income, you name it. If they can get you to be dumb and stay dumb, they can get you to be dependent on them forever.
That's a scary thing, isn't it? I didn't realize, you know, when you work in medicine, you do a lot of reading. Everyone holds you in such high regard as an individual, because they think, oh my God, you work in medicine. And those of us that are modest and realistic have said, look, I don't consider myself any different than a mechanic, because a mechanic can look at an engine and fix it. Okay. I look at a person and hopefully we can fix it. So it's just about memory recall and being able to retain the information. Law, and it just takes longer to learn everything. So I always try and say, think to myself, I'm no different or any better than anybody else that doesn't do anything in medicine, because it's just what I know. They probably know so much more stuff than I do about other bits and pieces. So it's encouraging people to think, look, you may think that you can't do anything, but like you say, even if they just read and learn something and then tell their friends and tell their friends and tell their friends. And once you go down those rabbit holes, they all lead to the same place, all of them. All lead to the same place.
You know, that should be like a goal for everybody, is to learn one new thing every day. Because I know I'm still constantly learning, and, you know, I am a sponge. I like to absorb new knowledge. And so to me, when I learn something new, I'm like, oh, well, holy cow, like I didn't know that. You know, this is fantastic. I hope people get to that point. Where, you know, and even like if you're one of those people that's constantly learning something new, write it all down. Be like, today I learned, you know, one thing. Tomorrow I learned two new things, whatever. And then when you get to that point, you do get that memory recall, and then you can share things with people and not have to constantly look stuff up, because you're just like, oh my God, I remember I read about that. Here you go. Now I'm going to share that information with other people, because I know that they may need to know that. That's what this game's about.
Exactly. And you look at the big accounts, they're just, I know some of them say, oh, I do this and I'm, you know, I've access. The majority of them are just people that have been reading and sharing the knowledge. And they're no different than anybody else. You know, they've just had more, so they might have a job that allows them to do more reading or whatever, but it's not easy to do what these people are doing at the forefront of the movement with everything they're doing. That's their full-time job.
Right.
You know? I've really quickly realized it's hard to be able to read, research, be a husband, be a father, and all that kind of stuff. And when I say research, I've had people throw this back in my face as well, said, oh, you've done this and you've peer-reviewed this and research. And so they're even now trying to belittle the word research. Research is anything that you're reading into, that you're learning. You're researching something, okay? That's basically what it means. How you do that, it doesn't matter within reason, because as long as you're learning stuff and it's come from a credible source, there you go, that's it. But now they're trying to discredit that when you turn around and say, I've researched. So you can't even say to anybody, especially the people that are so closed off about it, you can't even say, I've researched it. Oh yeah, you've researched this. Blah, blah, blah. And so they're even condemning you when you try and start or approach it from a non-aggressive point of view. And that's why I very quickly thought to myself, right, from now on, I'm only going to try and speak to people that want to listen. Because if you try and speak to people that don't want to listen, you're met with, you know, abuse, you know, or they get quite aggressive, or they just don't want to do it. So it's picking your battles, I think.
Name calling. Yeah. That's always my favorite thing. And that's one of the things we talked about the other day. People, when they attack me and they name call me, they do not understand that I really don't care. I've been called every name in the book and every name on the planet, and it matters to me not. And here's why. Because I know I was made to be me for a reason. I know that I'm an amazing person. in my own right, even if other people don't see that, don't understand that, I'm not going to change because somebody else wants me to be their version of who they think I should be. Don't ever fall for that.
No.
You be you. You stand by your morals, your values, the things that you believe in, and be the personality that you're supposed to be and that you are meant to be. Don't be the personality that somebody thinks that you should be.
Yes.
So,
and that's the thing, I think, when you're trying to find yourself in this whole movement, you really want to make a difference, and you're desperately trying to find your way in all of it. And that's what people try and focus on too much. It's like, what can I do? What can I do? Whereas if you're just trying to switch off and just think, what do I want to learn? What do I want to know about? What do I think is important to learn that's going to help me in what I'm doing every day? And do that and start with that. And you'll find that most of the people you work with will listen to things you've got to say. And before you know it, you'll be like, right, okay.
That's 100% true. And you can't expect people to, like one of the famous DMs I get all the time is, how can I wake somebody up? There is no blanket answer for that, because everybody learns at a different rate, and everybody accepts or soaks up information at a different rate. So the answer is never the same for everybody. But my suggestion is strongly, do not go straight for the adrenochrome and the babies and stuff like that. You know, if somebody has a medical mind, give them some medical information. If somebody's, you know, into finances, telling them some financial stuff will help. So there's no blanket answer to that. Just do your best to do your part.
That's it.
You know, and either people are going to be receptive to what you have to say or they're not. If they're not, tell someone else.
And this is it. And I think what I discovered, everyone has their own trigger. And that's what I like to call it, is everyone's got their own trigger, or the moment they go, right, this ain't right.
Right.
And
true.
That's them, I say awakening, but like being like, right, okay. And then, so everybody has their own trigger, their own circumstances that triggers that. And, you know, so it's, again, like, so you can't give someone a one size fits all red pill awakening moment, because it has to be whatever triggers them to be like, right, I've had enough of this fucking shit. And that could take longer with some people, shorter with some people, but then, you know, you've got to wait for it to happen naturally.
Right.
And things, and I'm, for me, I was literally going to bow out and call it a day, and that happened. So I was like, right, okay, I definitely know I'm on the right sort of path. And I'm not a spiritual person. I don't disbelieve it. I respect everybody that believes in God and whatever it is that they've got to do to keep themselves as, you know, mentally well and have the faith and all that. And I completely understand it, respect it and all that kind of stuff. For me, it's just not something I just struggle with it at the moment. But if you believe in all the other stuff that's going on, you can't then not believe in that aspect of things. So I'm trying to get my head around that from that point of view. But we've all got our own.
And that's one of those things that may take some people a little longer than others, you know, because this whole thing is a journey, and it's a path for a lot of people. And so, your acceptance of things may take a little longer just because of things you've been through, or, you know, things that people have experienced, deaths in the family or deaths of someone close or whatnot, and you lost your way. I know it's happened to me before, but, you know, I am where I am because that's where I'm supposed to be right now. So
have you noticed yourself becoming far less, and I'm not an aggressive person, feisty, I think would be the good word to use, or whatever, you know, I'm a bit sprightly, but I find myself now talking to other people and just being like, just chill out, have love and light, and just try to portray. And I'm like, where the fuck is this shit come from? Cause that's just not me at all.
Yeah. Because I used to be like very tightly wound, and everything upset me and everything irritated me, and so much stress. And I always felt like a ball of rubber bands. You know what I mean? How they're so tight together. And then I had a near death experience a couple of different times, and it changed like my entire outlook on life, and it changed everything. And like, some people get really stressed out and they're like, oh my God, I got so many chores today and I have to clean the house and I have to get the laundry done and I have to vacuum and I have to blah, 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 blah. And they have all these things to do. To me, if you don't do something today because, you know, your energy's low or you don't feel good or whatever, guess what? The vacuuming will still be there tomorrow.
Yes, it will.
You don't have to live your life on a schedule as far as that kind of stuff goes. Give yourself a break. Don't stress out about the small stuff. Let little things go. If somebody leaves the toilet seat up, so what? How hard is it for you to flip it down? You know what I'm saying? Don't sweat the tiny things in life because they so don't matter. They just don't. In the grand scheme of things, if somebody leaves that toilet seat up, it is not going to harm you or hurt you in any way. It's not going to kill you, and you're not going to die from somebody not putting the toilet seat down. You know what I'm saying?
100%. And take time to download.
Life is too short.
Yeah, this is it. And you got, and this is something I learned again. You have to take a break. You have to take time off, 1 or 2 days where you're just not doing social media, because it's just, especially with what's going on over in the States with you guys. Fuck me. If I miss a day, it's like shit. Chomps this.
And, right.
You know, and I've just.
And we talk about that a lot on the show where, you know, people will be like, oh my God, like I didn't see you for 2 days. Are you okay? Like, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, no, I'm literally fine. Like sometimes there's just so much at once. I'm just like, okay. And I have so many things going on. You know, I'm doing so many things at once that sometimes I just need to unplug and be like, okay, so today I'm going to focus on me and I'm not going to research and I'm not going to read stuff. And I'm not going to have a lot of heavy interaction outside of my own household because that's what I need to ground me. It's important. Everybody do that.
It is because it does get overwhelming. And I can vouch for that. You know, I can read and read and read and read and eventually just think, fucking hell. You know, you've got.
And then you're like, oh my God, my brain is mush.
Yes, pretty much. And then, you know, and there's so many vast topics to and try not to be intimidated by it all is what I would say to everybody, because everyone when you first dip your toe in will be like, you seem so godly and like, oh, you are, know so much, and it's just like, yeah, but you'll get there, you just read the stuff that interests you, and you'll eventually get there and find things and watch videos and listen to podcasts. And podcasts I find really help because I can listen to them while I'm driving and things, and you know,
right,
and they're good if you remember what people are talking about. You could go away, look at it yourself, and things. So it is just trying to not think that you're trying to change the world, but you're just trying to be aware of what's happening. So if all of a sudden something happens, you're like, yeah, I thought it would, you know, I read that it might be this, and you're not running around right, losing your shit. You're packing your car because you've got the fuck out of there. That's what you're doing.
That's true. That's very true. So we're going to have to close up shop for today, but where can people find you at, and what are your final thoughts today?
So you can find me on Twitter at Kung Fu Medic or at Medic Matt 090. I'm not sure which one you can search with. Facebook as well, Matt Hench Taylor. Insta, I think I'm Medic Matt 090, but I don't go on there much. Final thoughts. Thank you so much for having me, Janet. This has been amazing.
You're absolutely welcome. I adore you.
Oh, well, I'm going to make myself a nuisance. So I'm going to make it, you will be hearing my voice again. I definitely think I'm not going to just disappear into the ethos, but I think, everybody just remember that we're all on the same side. It will be all right. And you got to try and get the balance right between the doom and the gloom. Everyone thinks, oh my God, this is happening and all this kind of happening. But then those people that are in the know, you don't see them panicking or anything at the moment. So we just got to let this whole thing pan out. They're not going to do anything that's going to eliminate the goodies, rather. They're not going to do anything that's going to eliminate thousands and millions of people. We've just got to try and stay in our lanes and just see what happens. Because we're not powerless, but knowledge is power in this scenario. So when things do get broken out, if they do start having these live tribunals and testimonies like
they're kind of teasing us with. I mean, I must admit, are you getting a bit tired of waiting now? To be honest, I'm a bit like, come on, this is. I just want to see some shit because it's comes. Do you think it's going to be on the 4th, or do you think it's going to be?
Everybody does, and everybody gets tired of waiting. However, remember, patience is a virtue, and to be able to catch a fox, you have to be able to outsmart them. So remember those things, because things don't happen on your timeline. Things happen on the timeline that it was meant to. So I'm looking forward to those days. I'm going to have me lots of popcorn and a, you know, celebration. We're going to have a little party.
Oh, yes.
However, you know, I still have faith. I know that things are going to play out how they're meant to. So I'm not worried. Things don't bother me. I don't get stressed out about that kind of stuff, because what's the sense of worrying about things that you can't change?
Well, yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So only work on changing the things that you know that you can. So hence the fact, if you know something or you hear something or you research something, share that with somebody else. That's how you make a difference. That's how you make a change. You don't have to be the biggest count in the world, because I'm not. Don't care. Doesn't matter to me. I'm just here to share knowledge and share other people's stories. So that's what it's all about for me.
That is it.
So anyway, I want to say thank you to Matt for joining us today. I love you dearly. I'm so appreciative that
thank
we could actually do this, because people need to get a view, not just what's going on in your little tiny bubble here, but everywhere. And so we're going to try to get guests from all over the place to come in and shed light on things that are going on and how it affects them as well. So anyway, for me and for Matt, again, thank you for joining us for another episode, and we will see you again very soon. Love y'all very much.